I am delighted to welcome to the Glasshouse podcast the wonderful Jean Evans. Myself and Jean spoke at an event very recently, and she was just like completely inspirational. And I was sitting down the back with a pen and paper, taking notes. So Jean has had like a wide and varied career. I can see a roll in her eyes as I say this, but she's had a wide and varied career. She's worked in corporate for many, many years, but in September 2020, I think I have it right, she set up her own business called Network Me. And she is just a thorough professional. So she's going to talk to us about what she does, what networking is, how it works for us. And she's going to tell us a little bit about her own story. So welcome to the Glasshouse podcast, Jean. I'm delighted to have you.
I am so happy to be here. I love, well, you know, I mean, obviously when we met across a crowded room in Dublin in early May, networking is my passion, but I have a lot of reasons behind that. And I suppose the baseline is, I think it makes the world a better place. It makes us better people. And when we understand who we are, that we have permission to be who we are, then I think we're all in a better place. And most people don't really get to understand that in their life and spend their life struggling. So that's not quite the intro to networking, but it's part of the story.
It's taken
a while to understand the why. Like you were saying there around corporate. So I suppose just to give the listeners a background. So when I graduated college, so I graduated UCD with a very useful degree in Italian and linguistics, which obviously the linguistics served me well. Italian did serve me well in that I literally graduated and a week later I moved to Italy because, well, I'd done Erasmus, I'd met a boy, and so moved over. So I ended up living in Italy for about 6 years, and I was working for Board Falcha, which it was at the time, so now known as Falcha Ireland. And while I was over there, I was supposed to be there for a year, on essentially what was called the European Orientation Program back in the day under IBEC. And I was supposed to be there for a year. Then there was an opportunity to extend the contract for another 10 months. And in the meantime, the girl who'd been the trade representative there, her contract wasn't being renewed. So I went for her position, which was a trade representative. And that meant building all of the relationships between Italy and Ireland and Northern Ireland, so all the operators, but also out of Milan. So I was based out of Milan there. We were stationed over sort of Greece, Malta and Cyprus. So I really got to sort of go around the Mediterranean base out of traveling, which was great. Yeah. So I used to say to my Italian flatmates, I knew Italy better than they did because I actually went and traveled and explored and did all of that. But when the peace treaty happened, anybody like myself who worked in the market, we had to move over to this new entity, which was Tourism Ireland, or is Tourism Ireland. And so I continued, and Tourism Ireland sort of works on marketing the island of Ireland. So I was working doing that. So marketing North and South Ireland, again, to these countries. Then after a while, I decided I needed to move on. And there was two jobs that came up in New York. And my original plan had been to go to Spain to learn Spanish. And I said, I'm going to go and work in a bar, go learn Spanish, whatever. But two jobs came up in Tourism Ireland in New York. And one was the same as the one I was doing, and one was business tourism. And I said, right, going to go for the business tourism one. And if I get it, I get it. And if I don't, I'm off to Spain to learn Spanish. Track forward, I did get the job. So ended up going over to New York. While I'd been in Ireland, I had to process my visa. I got together with a guy who fast track forward then again became my husband, fast track forward again became my ex-husband. but I'd been there for a year and then moved back to Ireland. So I ran the convention bureau then in Dublin for 5 years. And then I got approached to take on a position of head of department as a professional conference organizer with a company called MCI out in Dunleary. So I did that for 10 years. So that's sort of that's the corporate stuff that sort of just gives the background. So it's all the back, you know, tourism, business tourism, leisure, that sort of background, which I loved. And I suppose where things came to a head was I thought I was a corporate girl for life. I'm a recovering workaholic, so I was a workaholic at the time. I literally worked myself to the bone. And within all of that, God, I'm getting really down dirty with all of this. But as I said, I'm pretty much an open book. There's no point in hiding any of this. But I went through an acrimonious divorce. I met somebody else. Since then I've had three children with my partner, but you know, I had burnout, I had miscarriages, I had all sorts of different things that happen in the interim, all part of, I suppose it's part of the way life is, part of the stress, part of me not being able to assert myself, and all of this, while it's not directly linked, it's all intrinsically linked in where I am today and who I am today and why I talk about networking the way I do. And I think because for 22 years, I felt not good enough. I felt like an imposter. I felt like a fish out of water. I worked in a very extroverted industry, and I'm an introvert. And I didn't know I was an introvert, so I didn't know how to manage that. I didn't know how to manage me. I was very hardworking. But my solution was, I'm going to outwork everybody. I'm going to work harder. I'm going to work, you know, do more. Because I didn't know about mentors at the time. I didn't know about coaching at the time. I knew I was ambitious, but I didn't know how to channel that ambition. And there was nobody who took me aside and said, here, this is how you can do things. Or did you know that being an introvert means you have to do X, Y, Z to manage your boundaries, your energy? Did you know how being an introvert, how that's going to impact on you being a manager and developing your own career, what that looks like? Nobody sort of took me aside and said, here's what it looks like being a female in the workplace, having children, how to navigate all of that. And there were so many different things that happened. And when I look back now, oh my Lord, the things I would do differently. But the other side of that is, I wouldn't be here today had I not had those experiences, good, bad, and indifferent.
I think it's important that you note that, though, because, I mean, you know that I've been going through my own things, and there's no point looking at changing it, because if you change what happened, you might change the lesson, and then that can change your trajectory, you know, so.
100%. And I think it's also, it would change your ability, it would change the lens with which we look at things. It would change the perspective and our ability and empathy for other people's situations. I mean, there's loads of stuff that I suppose with the hindsight and the perspective I have now, that if I saw somebody going through what I went through, I would be able to help and mentor and guide them in a way to protect them from going through what I went through. Now, we're all going to go through our own things. You know, it's like when I look at my kids, I'm sort of going, I'm always going to do my best by them. I hope that they don't have some of the challenges I had growing up, but I also know they're going to have their own challenges. So I can protect them over here, but I can't protect them from what I don't know is coming down the line. All I can do is give them the ability and guidance to make good decisions. And that's sort of part of what I view as being a good parent. But I think, yeah, the lens, it is what it is. Was it hard? Yes. Was it painful? Yes. Did I spend years being really angry? Yes.
Let me ask you something on that. Did you turn that inwards, that anger that you felt, like, you know what, maybe not being able to manage a situation or not having the tools that you felt that, you know, that you needed at the time? Sometimes, yeah. Especially with introverts, like, it's because you're also then non-confrontational. So the easiest person to beat up can be yourself. Did you find you did that?
Yes. Did I beat myself up? Possibly. I suppose in the framework of, I was very, very angry. You know, when I came back off maternity leave, you know, I had left being head of department, came back, they had taken that away. I had sat on a board. I was no longer on the board. They changed a whole load of things and made my operations manager head of department. And she's a wonderful lady. She was put in a position, but nobody spoke to me about all of this. It all just happened while I was on maternity leave. And I didn't know at the time, my own naivety and ignorance, that you can't do that. You cannot simply change people's roles, my desk, my location, everything was changed. And I was just, I really was this massive curveball that was thrown at me. And, you know, when you're coming back from maternity leave, you're already emotional, and there's the guilt of leaving your baby, and there's so many other things that are happening. You're still physically recovering, you know, as beautiful as having children is, it's also a massive trauma on a woman's body, and there's so many other things,
and emotions
and emotions and tiredness, yeah, and everything that's going on. And then there was all this stuff lobbed at me, so I probably didn't have the emotional wherewithal to deal with it at the time, but I was really, really, really pissed off. Really pissed off. I hope I'm allowed curse, because I do. But I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have the allies, and everybody else on the board was a man or male. So I didn't have allies to look at it from my perspective, or to have somebody in my corner that would help me. There was a massive, you know, and again, it's all terminology, and it's amazing the terminology and buzzwords, how quickly they take force. But when I look back at it, it was just this diesel train. What, you know, I for me, the diesel train is this connotation of this big, heavy machine that when it gets going, it's chug, 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 slow at the start, and then when it goes, it's full throttle. So I look at it as this full throttle diesel train of unconscious bias, just shed loads of spades and shovelfuls and wheelbarrowfuls of unconscious bias, in not knowing how to deal with me as a new mom, as a female on the board. And it was just all of these things. And when I look back at it, God, I it annoys me, because I think it didn't need to be like that. None of this generally needs to be the way it is. But it's just this lack of awareness and an ignorance is really what it comes down to. And with anything, like, you know, I was writing a post on diversity and inclusion this morning, and as a cisgender female, white cisgender female, I have a perspective, and that's my perspective. I don't profess to know everything about, you know, diversity and inclusion, but I'm open to it. And I think the same is back in terms of this scenario for me, that the bias that was thrown at me and the inequality that was thrown at me as a mom, it requires you to think outside the box. It requires you to have conversations. It requires you to listen and go, I'm not sure what to do about this, but let me go and find out. But it's when you choose to ignore and not find out that I have a massive problem with. I don't expect everybody to get things right.
No, of course not.
You'll give people credit when you feel them, that they're trying. But for me, there was no trying. It was just, I was put into a different situation, and it felt like the legs were cut from underneath me. So in answer to the question around introversion, was I very angry? Yes, I was extremely angry, but I didn't know how to channel it or where to put it or what to do with it. And honestly, I was loyal to a fault where I shouldn't have been.
Well, we spoke before. I know that we had had a chat before. For anyone listening or watching, we had, just after we had caught up at the event, myself and Jean did a Zoom call, and we were chatting pretty much like we're chatting now. Like, there's no real, I was going to swear as well. there's no real difference from it. But what I would say to you, and what like came across to me now, is like, with your networking, and I don't know if this is like one of the reasons, or if you've thought about this, that why you went into networking, is that when something traumatic happens to you like that, whether it's like, let's just say professionally, and you lose all of that, right? That goes away, and it happened to me. You become much more precision-like in building your squad, right? And building a community. Because I remember when I lost my job, I lost everything, because obviously people still work there. Like, it's not out of malice or anything, you know, horrible. It's just that like people have their own lives, and I was having like a breakdown. But I networked. I didn't know that that's exactly what I was doing, but I was networking and putting myself out there in a vulnerable state and being honest, saying this is what's happened. And then people were reaching out to me. So I built then a community on LinkedIn, and it's like I had a different standard for the people then that I would be interacting with than I had before, because I've been going through with this privilege of just like working in a great company, working with great people, earning great money, and never had any reason to question people's motives and things like that until it goes wrong. Because it's great to, it's easy to be friendly and supportive of somebody when they're a top biller, but when the shit hits the fan, like, you really know who was there for you, you know, the kind of way genuine, compassionate way. So did you, do you think that you did that with the networking, that you learned how to, you know, build those relationships because you'd lost the relationships before, or was there another kind of point of origin for you?
There's probably another point of origin. So when, I suppose for me, 2016, so 2015, I had suffered the miscarriage. 2016, I was extremely busy in work. It was one of the busiest years we had. A large team. I had got pregnant again. And by the end of 2016, it was actually my mother who said, right, I'm bringing you to the doctor, because she could see I was burnt out. And I knew I was tired, but I didn't know where I was at. And my doctor signed me off work. And I sort of said, listen, can I do part-time? And he goes, no, because I know you, part-time will become full-time. And he just goes, you just need to stop. Then I got really, really bad sciatica, and I'm getting to the point. But so by the end of, so I was on sick leave till the end of May when my youngest daughter was born. And then I was on maternity leave. And while I was on maternity leave, my team was disbanded and told to find a new job. So I knew it was coming. But again, as I said at the start, I was a corporate girl for life. I was suited and booted. I was in the high heels and the suits. I was traveling around the world. This was my life. So when I knew this, you know, I was managing a new baby. I had two other toddlers. I was feeding. I was emotional. I was tired. All of the normal stuff for a new mom, for mums. And I knew I was not going to have a job. So it's like, right, you're breastfeeding two other toddlers and you've no money and you have no job. And you're going, well, gee, thanks. That's fantastic. Thank you for that. So it was like identity crisis. What do I do now? What are my pillars? So I'm quite a generalist. You know I'm capable. I can throw my hands to a lot of things, but I'm not, I don't have this specialty of being an accountant or being a solicitor or whatever. You know, I do sales, I do marketing, management. That would be my sort of experience. So I started working with my other half, and what I realized, a couple of realizations. One was when I stepped out of tourism that I knew nobody. I absolutely knew nobody. And I thought, oh my Lord, like literally it was just, how did I not know? I didn't know this. Like, you know, it was like, whoa, I really don't know anybody. So I was working with my partner has a business in managed print. So I said, I better go out networking. I don't know anybody who needs printers or scanners or office equipment or what have you. I didn't know that industry, so I had to learn the industry, which was quite ironic because I was the person, like, you know, when prior to that, working at big companies, if the printer didn't work and a technician came, I'd be like, he'd be, you know, usually a bloke would come up and sort of say, this is what's wrong. And I'm going, I do not need to know. I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee. When I come back, I'm going to press print and it's going to print, and a piece of lovely paper with writing on it is going to spit out. I do not need to know anything more. So the irony then, working with my other half, then I did have to learn a lot about it. But I had to go out networking because I needed to start by building connections and awareness. And I was appalling at it because I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing. Prior to that, I would have networked, but didn't know I was networking, didn't know it was a term, didn't know it was a thing. And I was pretty bad at it because, you know, I would have gone into sales mode. I would have gone into doing all the things that I would advise people not to do. But what I realized, between 2018 and 2019, I was probably part of about 8 or 9 different networks, you know, different times a day, sometimes once a month, once a week, whatever, big mix. But after 3 years, I realized I was far more confident in myself. And what had happened was that people would have said in tourism that I was very confident because I would have gone and pitched for business. So gone in front of, you know, I'd go around the world pitching for Ireland or Dublin or a particular conference to be won for a country or a city, or to pitch for the business. And I could get up and talk about that. And people would say, well, you're very confident. You have to be confident if you're going to get up and talk about that. And I was going to, like, yes, I'm confident in my content, confident in my ability to convey a message or articulate something, but it's not about me. I'm just a vehicle through which the message is being transferred. Whereas networking is highly nuanced and it's all about you when you're going out and talking and you're building relationships. What I realized as well is that I have to find my own voice, that when you're in corporate and when you work for a big company, you morph into the voice of that company. So your tone of voice, tone of brand is around their KPIs, their strategy and their agenda and whatever their goals are and metrics. You know, your language is all about the company. It's not about you. But when you're out, it's like, then who are you? What do you stand for? And working all of that out and building confidence.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and so like I was coming from a place where I'm naturally shy. I'm an introvert. And at this point, I still didn't know I was an introvert. COVID hit and I was, you know, so we literally dismantled the cot of my youngest, put her cot in with the other two and put a makeshift desk and a screen. And then it'd be like a trade-off, who's going to do an hour of work, who's going to do an hour. And then after a while, I just thought this was exhausting. I was also parallel to that sort of helping run a network with a view to taking it on. And again, I was just burnt out. And by May of 2020, when COVID hit, I was exhausted. And I was working so hard, literally hour after hour on Zoom, working so hard. And I was lying in the garden, I remember in May, and thinking, I don't think I was this tired after childbirth as I am now, because I was just burning myself out again. And so I was at this juncture that I realized that I was an introvert. And I'm not sure why I came to that or how I came to that piece of knowledge, but it was such a massive aha moment for me. And I also watched a lot of people struggling at the same time, trying to get online to do networking and build connections and really struggling with that whole thing. And I thought, I'm going to start writing a blog on this. And cue a ping pong match. When I say a ping pong match, I mean an Olympic speed ping pong match of imposter syndrome that went on in my head. Who am I to start talking about networking, you know, when this is relatively new for me? And, you know, but I started writing about it. And it was off until the October that I actually published the blog and put it live, because I was so scared about the whole process of putting me and my thoughts out there. But when I was working with Brian's company as well during COVID, then it became very, very, I'm going to say claustrophobic in a sense, where the two of us working at home, trying to homeschool the kids and everything like that. Olivia we're starting to potty train her. So it was literally all going on at the same time. And I just thought, I can't do this. I already have one expensive divorce under my belt. And I just thought, let's not do this. So I pulled back from working in his company. And at that point, then I thought, well, what do I want to do? So it was sort of that September, October time, 2020, that I thought, I would actually like to teach people to network. And where I've got to since then is still with the view of teaching people how to network. But there was something in me, and I didn't know what it was at the time. And it took me a couple of years to sort of unearth what it was. But what I've come to the conclusion is that why I'm doing what I'm doing now is when you, like, people will think about networking as going into a room, giving over a business card and trying to make a sale. And for me, it's actually, how do you present yourself? How do you connect with other human beings? How do you put the best version of yourself out there? How do you learn who you are? That when you understand and you have the permission and realize that you have the permission to be who you are and that you are the best version of you, but you have to learn what that looks like. And that sort of gave me another realization that, you know, we are a lifelong project. We are our own lifelong project, trying to understand ourselves. But most people don't take the time to understand themselves, but don't understand why that keeps them stuck or moving to the beat of somebody else's drum, rather than understanding what's my beat, what makes me happy, what's my purpose. And within all of the trials and tribulations of everything I've been through, what I realized was, you know, when people understand what introversion means and how it will impact them, but also how it can support them, if they understand what it means, they can win. If people understand, you know, building their own confidence, what it can do for them if they want to go out to get a job, if they want a leadership position, if they want to negotiate more, if they want to be a better parent, a better friend, better partner. To be better in life, you have to understand yourself. Understanding yourself gives you confidence. Confidence enables you to take action. It enables you to understand what your goals are, what your aspirations are, and to be more and do more. And I think when you wrap all of that in a nice bow, that makes for better human beings, better society.
100%.
And, you know, people think it's networks. No, sorry, I'm rabbiting on, but people just think it's just networking. And I'm going, it's not. It's actually making, it's a little dent, a little dent in helping the world be a better place because people feel better in themselves. And I would challenge anybody to say that if, you know, if you can grow your confidence and accomplish anything, why would you not spend the time learning how to be confident?
Do you know, I think sometimes there's a bit of a misconception with confidence. And I've been listening to a David Goggins podcast. I can't remember which one he's on, but I'll put it in the comments. And it's like what you were saying there, that you were able, I think COVID gave some of us, I mean, it was very hard, but COVID gave some of us the space to reflect and to take stock of what you want to do. And when you're sometimes, whether it's professional or personal trauma, so whether it was your divorce or, you know, coming back from maternity leave, when you have something like that and then you have space to process it, when you look at yourself, and this is, I think, where the confidence comes from, you have to look at yourself, warts and all. So it's, which is hard. Like, it's very hard to look at, like, you know, I mean, like, I realized that I was like a people pleaser and I hid behind perfection. So I actually taught people how to treat me because it was like, well, Siobhan will be all right with that, or Siobhan, and I'm like, I was the same as you. I was like, you know, just like on the edge, burnt out. But it's like when I had the space to think about it, it was like then when people say something or the world tells you something that, you know, you're this, you're too old, you're too, you know, too young, too female, you know, too gay, whatever it is. You have that knowledge of yourself that is like, well, I may be many things, but I know I'm not this, 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 and this. And you know where you want to go. And I think that's where confidence comes from. Well, it came from for me, but also I didn't realize that you could teach somebody to be confident. That, like, you know, when you see somebody speaking, I think it was Peter Cosgrove I saw speaking once, and he said to me that someone had come up to him and said, oh, you're a natural. And he's like, I spent hours practicing to look that natural, you know, and to come across that confident, because he would be quite, like, I think an introvert as well. But when he's on stage, or even when you're talking to him about a specific subject, he's so engaging, you know, and so charismatic. Yeah. But he would practice pauses, this, that. And I think you can do the same with confidence. But with the networking, like, the word networking sometimes has a connotation to it. And it was like what you were saying when you went into it, that it's salesy, you know, and like it's making fake relationships. Because I remember, like, when I first, you know, would hear people when I first got into recruitment, you have to network, make my teeth itchy, because it's like, oh, it doesn't seem genuine, you know, and it doesn't seem this. But I googled before I spoke to you, because I do research on this. I googled in the Merriam-Webster dictionary the definition of networking. Have you looked at it?
No, I haven't.
You
actually
probably don't have to. Okay, but for everybody who's listening, definition of networking is an exchange of information or services among individuals, groups, or institutions. And then, you know, the way, like, in a dictionary of thesaurus, it gives you an example of the word being used in a sentence. And this is how the word was used. Networking remains the number one cause of job attainment.
I hate that description of it, to be honest with you.
But that's a dictionary.
That's a dictionary explanation, quite honestly, that I would fling out a window. So everything that it has said, and the two, both in the example, but also the description.
Exchange of information and services, yeah.
It's just said it's a transaction.
Yeah.
And that's all it has said there. So if somebody looked that up and said, that's a transaction, it's a, you give me something, I'll give you something. You do something for me, I'll do something for you. There's a transaction there. Or it's sort of Machiavellian, it's means to an end, that you do this, you will get this. Of course, there's always going to be an outcome from networking. But first and foremost, it's about building relationships. And it's about human connection. So yes, networking is a huge part of getting your next job by virtue of the relationships that you've built. You don't just go from, hey, have a conversation at a networking event to get dream job. It doesn't work like that. It is about building awareness. It's about building connections. It's about building your confidence. It's about letting people know who you are, you know, and I think it was one of the things that I think I said this to you on the Zoom, and it was a realization that I had when we were speaking at the PA summit in May, was that had I, you know, I'm sort of going through my cancer treatment at the moment, and had I got that 4 years ago or 5 years ago, when I was in corporate, it would have been a very, 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 very different experience. And it would have been a far more lonely experience, because when things happen, you're dead right, and you said it yourself, when things happen, when you're flying high, people are there. When things aren't going so right, there's very few people there. But the people who were there, you'll remember them, because they see beyond the job you do and the money you make. And when I came forward to where I am and the experience I've had this year, the amount of people that have reached out, sent letters or cards, or even it was just put a lip balm, here's a really good lip balm in the post, or clothes. And I got loads of different things. And it was just, it wasn't about the things, it was about the fact that I had built these relationships, that people would take time out to do something because they cared. And that was a whole different thing. And that all came down to networking. So what I'd say, when people sort of talk about networking and it's about a transaction, it's about this, I'm going, sometimes your need is not a piece of business. Your need is just friendship and support. So I had one lady, Dawn Lean, and amazing. She has dropped me into the hospital so many times, getting up at hours, sometimes having to be at my house at 6:45 or 7 in the morning because she was dropping me into the hospital, but did that. But I wouldn't have had that support or those relationships to lean on when I needed them. But that was massive support, because I've got 3 young kids, so Brian had to manage the kids and getting them school and lunches and everything like that. So, and I, when I was going through chemo, wasn't able to go in and out of the hospital. I needed lifts. But it's all of these things, all of these relationships. But I know that when, I have a t-shirt and I need to dig it up because I'm speaking at something on Thursday and it's sort of relevant, but I have a t-shirt where the title I was given when I was on I was part of a team for these games, and I was the Irish representative, and on the back of the t-shirt they just called me Ice Maiden, and that'll give you an idea. And I own that because I know why people thought that of me, and who I am today is not any different to who I was then. I'm just able to let me out. I'm the same person. I have the same values in terms of inclusion and wanting to do my best, and the person I am, I'm just more evolved now. And that evolution is based on having to spend time getting to learn about me, and also being able to talk about my experience, my journey, and to let people in. And that has also transpired in terms of the friendships and the support I have today and the journey I'm on today.
Do you know what, it's I don't want to use the word inspirational, because I think you can have like an inspirational card, or there's like, it's just bandied about. But what I think is really interesting, especially for women, but I mean like for all people, is that when I hear you talking about like where you've come from and what you've done, that it's very much like a no holds barred perspective, and there's an element of enlightenment in it. And I remember when I'd lost my job, my biggest fear, like there's a whole shame thing, my biggest fear was like, what will I say to people, or what will I do? And I'd been posting these videos on LinkedIn, and a gentleman, he used to be the CEO of Siemens, he messaged me and he said, so I didn't know I was networking by putting these like honest, like, true to God videos and clips up. And he was saying to me, your clips brighten up my day, this and that. And then we started talking. So he wasn't looking for anything. He just took the time to encourage me. And then I spoke to him, and then he was saying, maybe you should do a podcast. And then that's where that came out of. And there was nothing that was, I wasn't looking for a job. I was still going through a process with my previous company, but it was like that, I think, is like the type of network working that you're talking about, because his message and him reaching out, unbeknownst to him at the time and unbeknownst to me, changed my life. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of gave me my faith back, and it was that human connection, because we were still isolating. I was at home in this like small pokey apartment, like, you know, in Dublin 8, like, just you can only go 2.5 kilometers for your house. My mum was cocooning, so it was like it became that online. And then once he had done that, then somebody else did, and then I was inspired. And that's where I mean with the word inspiration. I was inspired then to reach out to other people, that you would see them like posting things, you know, posting like honest things on it. And I feel like that what you're doing today with like telling your story and narrating it so well is that you're giving other people the permission to speak about it. Because I mean, even with miscarriages, the amount of women I've had who want to go back to work and they've had babies. I mean, like maybe cursed again, you're a bad influence on me, like really accomplished women. And just because they've been out of the office for a year, and sorry, I'm getting that excited, I punched myself in the jaw, but they've been out of the office for the year and they think then, you know, well, I've forgotten everything. And to go back then, like you did, to a place that was not welcoming and not supportive, all it would do is reinforce the thoughts or the inner critic that you already had. So I think the fact that you're saying that all of those things happened to you, and not because of them, but despite them, you are now a successful businesswoman, you know?
Yeah, getting there. Thank you. Getting there. And I suppose part of it has taken me years to understand that I know I have a bigger message to share with the world, and I don't fully understand where it's at or where I'm going to get with it. But I just know, and I use the word faith, I have absolute faith that I'm going in the right direction, and everything that has happened to me is mine, is my story, good, bad, and indifferent. But you know, one of the things that I say to my, particularly my middle child, my daughter, she would tend to catastrophize things. And, you know, when I'm trying to get her to bring it back, you know, when she's thinking everything, the world is nigh and nobody likes her and this, that and the other. And she's going through a lot of sort of young girl sort of trauma between school and mean girls and what have you, is that we always have a choice. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that people don't realize in life, that we always, always, always have a choice. Not only in, you know, as you sort of said, it's like we train people how to treat us, but we have a choice in who we let into our lives. We have a choice as to the voices we let into our head. And there's a book I read recently by an author called Ivan Meisner. And it's called Who's in Your Room? And I loved the analogy, because when I learned it, I went, that's so true. So basically, is if you can imagine a box, a big, huge box, and it has got one door into it, every time you let somebody in through that door, they are in that box forever. And that is the way our mind works. Yeah, it is. And when that's a powerful thought, isn't it?
I have to burn that box and start over.
But most of us, don't really, if you had that knowledge yet, you'd be sort of going, yep, can I have a new box, please? I'm going to start again. But if we think about all the voices, our subconscious, every moment, everything that's ever been said to us, every trauma, micro trauma, every observation, comment, thought, inner critic, everything is in that box. And everything that everybody has ever said to you or walked through your life, whether it was a nanosecond, a moment, a conversation, or a decade, whatever, they're in that box because they can never, ever get out of the box. And the point of that is we should be very, very careful about who we let in to our box, because they'll be there forever. And even if it's something that they came in and it was something 20 years ago, it's still there because it's our subconscious.
You're making me think about all those.
Everything.
Yeah, all those things. Like, I even remember working in a bar for about 8 years afterwards. I never wore a sleeveless top because the guy who worked behind the bar, he held my arms, you know, to move me out of the way. Like, there's been worse that's happened to me. I remember him saying, God, you've got like really fat arms. And like, I think I wore a cardigan for a good 8 years. Like, so now I'm thinking that fecker is still in that box. Like, that was something. And then there was like obviously things that like happened that would have been worse, you know.
It is mad. I was 15 years of age at school, and I used to have really, really long hair. And I had my hair behind my ears, and a girl took it upon herself to take the hair from beyond my ears. And she didn't say anything, but what she was saying was basically your ears stick out. And so up to January of this year, 2023, I never, ever, ever wore my hair up out ever again. So that was 32 years. So we can do the maths on the age there, 32 years. What happened to change that, as you know, obviously we're going to be in audio, but my hair is tied up. It's also clipped back within an inch of my life with those brown bobby pins, whatever they're called. And because I went through chemo, I lost 80% of my hair. So I'm happy to have the hair that I have, but it's a far cry from what it was last December. So the difference is I'm just happy to have a bit of hair to tie up now, because I could have lost all of it. I went through the cold cap treatment. So it's, again, it's just how things shift, but how, what, and these are what are called, or the term I've only come across recently, but the guy who said that and the girl who did that to me, these are micro traumas. And they are micro traumas that had an impact on us thinking we were less than and we weren't good enough.
Yeah.
And our exterior didn't suit somebody else. And now when I look back at it, I'm going, how dare she touch me or do anything like that? And how dare, but then I have to also own it, going, I let her into my head. She was in my box. She'll always be in my box.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I was listening to on the David Goggins podcast, because he was saying as well that, you know, one, it's like people have opinions on cheese, you know, the kind of, so they'll have opinions on your hair, your top, your clothes, like, so you really shouldn't, you know, they don't think about you that much. They say something in passing, and he said something that was interesting, and I'm going to try and not make an absolute pain to this, but he was saying that there's the 1 second rule, okay? And he was saying that, like, now your present moment is much shorter than your whole future, right? So why make a decision that's going to be comfortable for you in this short present moment? So whether that's like not writing your blogs or not doing your marketing or not going to therapy or not getting up and going to work, when that decision has a ripple effect through the whole length and breadth of your future, right? And that was something that stood out to me. And then there's another thing, I don't know if you read Glennon Doyle.
I'm pointing because I have the biggest, I'm in an office, we moved into a house, so I've just got books everywhere, and one of them is that.
Yeah, so Glennon Doyle's book. So I read that like when I was going through the whole thing back in 2020, and there was a part in it where she says that, like, you know, you walk around with yourself all day, every day. The longest relationship you have with anybody in your life is with yourself, right? And if you have to disappoint somebody else to live your authentic life, and I'm like, this isn't about going and taking drugs, but like to make a decision that is right and true for you and who you are, disappoint everybody else, you know, because they'll be disappointed for a minute or, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever. But if you disappoint yourself, you have that voice in your head and you're walking around with it. And I think what you were saying there about when we have those, like, what do you call them, micro traumas?
Mm-hmm.
When I think of that, I also then think, and I don't know if you'd go down this rabbit hole, of like, have I done that to someone? Have I said something so flippantly and not with malice, but if it hurts, it hurts. Do you know the kind of thing? Have I done that or said something like that to somebody that would have that effect on them?
I'm sure we both have, because we're both human. And I know I can be very past remarkable, but I've got much better at it, and I've over time learned to widen my lens because I widen my conversations and I've learned more and I've studied more. But what I, you know, and I suppose an answer to yes, we have, I don't know when I have or to whom, and all I would say is I'm sorry, because I didn't mean to. I would never ever in a million years want to hurt another human being. But have I? Yes, of course I have, because I'm human. And sometimes I might be low in energy or very tired and it's a past remark and it's whatever, just do, you know, do as I say, just get it done, you know. And we can do things because we are human. But I think the more, this is why I say, the more I study and the more I do, we are our own lifelong project. And most people do not spend any time learning about themselves. But on the journey that I've gone on, you know, I went and I don't really know why I've done certain things in the last few years. I just sort of happened upon, this feels right, I'm going to go and do it. So I was a coachee and I had done a mindset coaching course in 2021. And then I went and trained to become a DISC profiler, so on personality testing. And it was all of these things thinking, yeah, this feels right. Not sure exactly where I'm going with it, but it all feels right. And then October last year into this year, I qualified to become a life, business and executive coach. And it all started fitting in for me. And some of the real, you know, I suppose when you're doing the coaching, there's a huge amount of introspection, there's a huge amount of reading and self-reflection and essays and exercises to do while you're training. But what I realized out of it is that, you know, you were talking there about people doing, you know, people pleasing and taking, you know, evaluating the decisions they make, whether it's right for them or whether it's right for somebody else. You know, do you take a minute to piss off somebody else or do you live your truth? But the problem is that most people don't know what their truth is. And what I learned through the coaching and the realization is people think, you know, you're told you should goal set. You should set your goals, but people don't know what their goals are because they don't know what they're technically allowed to do, and what they're allowed to do fits into priorities, their values, their roles. And most people don't ever take the time to study this and to learn about it. You know, when I came out of corporate, I'd never heard of coaches before. I'd never heard of this whole industry. And it's been around for in Ireland since I think about 2000 or so. It's relatively new in Ireland, but within my corporate world, it just had never come up, had never been spoken about. So when I was going out networking, I was meeting all of these coaches going, what is this about? And obviously coaching is a wide and weird, wonderful arena, if you like, you know, nutritional coach or a life coach or whatever. There's lots of different types of coaches. But part of me was what I realized, I would follow a lot of Brené Brown as well as, and what Brené Brown would say is that not one of us, not one person, not one human being on the planet is able to solve and work out who they are, what they want to do on their own. We're simply not wired to be able to do this stuff on our own. And yet a lot of us feel stuck or with a lack of confidence or just not knowing, and we need somebody to soundboard things off. And this is where coaching comes in. And I think, you know, within where I was at therapy a couple of years ago, and I would highly recommend it. You know, before I would have said, sure, just have a cup of tea, chat to somebody. And I could never understand, you know, in an American program, everybody has a psychologist and a therapist and what have you. And it's just saying my internet is unstable, so I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, it's okay.
But, you know, so I didn't know that. Cool. I went to therapy and I talked about it. And I suppose the thing with therapy is that therapy and counselling is about where you are today, but looking into your past and trying to unravel and understand things that have happened to you and the impact they've had to where you are today. But the difference with coaching is looking at where you are today, where do you want to be, ability partner, to bring you forward, to help you unearth and unleash your own potential. And I think all of everything I've gone through and everything that I've experienced, what I learned to do is look back and, you know, when I spent so many years angry in corporate at the way I'd been treated, it was like, okay, well, I can look back at that now with, you know, dispassionately and objectively and going, right, what can I learn from that and bring forward with me and leave the rest behind because it doesn't serve me? But I'm going to take the bits that do serve, that I could be more empathetic and more helpful or ask more powerful questions because I know what's going on underneath. Or if somebody is too shy or introverted, I can ask the questions because I've been through all of this. You know, if you're being made redundant, you know, a lot of people have this massive anxiety around redundancy, but because it's focused in, they've no idea where they're going to go next. So, you know, I get it, being there. But what I would say is, you know, for anybody who is going through redundancy or thinks they're going to go through redundancy, is it could be the best thing that ever happened to them.
But we spoke about this the last time.
Now it allows them time to work who they are.
No, I know that we spoke about it the last time, that your only responsibility when something happens, because it is going to happen, like shit's going to go wrong for sure. Like, you know, is to strangle the good out of it, you know? And I think to circle back to what you were saying about your kids, that you can give them advice on what you've been through and what your experience is. But like, they will experience things that, you know, you haven't gone through and you can't give them, you know, certain things. But say for me, like going through the whole, like losing your job and having an existential crisis, my mom had never been through that because she didn't have the privilege or the time to invest in her own career, because she was like raising me, she was a single mother, she was all of those things. But what she did give me, and this is a conversation I had with her the other day, was grit and the ability to know that, well, I mean, she kind of taught me that you're built differently. You know, there's nothing that you can't overcome. There's nothing that you can't manage, you know, and we don't know exactly what it's going to be. You know, Mike Tyson says everyone has a plan till they get punched in the face, but it's knowing that whatever it is, it can be managed. You know, it can be overcome by you and by the support network. And I know for myself, like, I'm blessed, like my circle has gotten like so much smaller, but it's like family, you know, it's like close friends now. It's like what you're saying, it's like my room or whatever it is has now been filled. And maybe this is the only thing we can do, is that like, if we can't get people out of that box or out of that room, is to fill it with louder voices that are like, you know, reassuring and full of love, that drown it out. Like, so those feckers will still be in there, the negative ones, you know, and the ones who said more than, I'm like, your fat arms or whatever it might be, but the ones who actually really, you know, did, like, gave you scar tissue. But if you start now, yeah, it's not too late to fill the room with people who are more positive, more uplifting. Like, you're in my room now, so
yeah,
that's a good voice to have.
Yeah, and you know what? I think this takes it also takes observation, because when you have the right people in your room and the right people around you and the right strength of voices, I think part of, and again, it comes back down to, if you don't know who you are, what your values are, what your roles are, what your priorities are, and how to manage that. And most people do not know. And that's where they struggle and they're stuck, and there's the disenfranchisement, and there's the imposter syndrome, and there's the feeling less than or have to keep up with the Joneses. And even when I say that, I'm going, God almighty, that is exhausting to live like that. But that's the way most people live and choose to live. And I'm sort of going, but there is a better way. And the better way is understand who you are and what matters to you. And when you know what those values are, when you know who you are, what roles you play in life, what are the priorities, what matters to you, then you start aligning with people who have similar values to you. And the strength of our confidence and our ability to excel is, you know, and this is not new, but it's about the quality of people you have surrounded by you. And then you have to question, do they raise you up? Do they have your back? Do they want more for you? Are they growth orientated? Do they make you feel good about yourself? Because if the answer is no to all of those, you have to get new people, because they're the people that you're allowing into the room, but it doesn't serve you. And it's doing you a disservice. But if you truly believe in you, and you sort of go, you don't need to know the answers to all of these questions. But what I would say to anybody who thinks, crap, I don't know the answer, or I'm starting to squirm because this feels a bit uncomfortable, good. Go find yourself a coach, go work it out. Or are you going to spend the next 10, 20 years struggling? Or are you going to work with a coach for 6 months who says, let's get this together, let's find out who you are to propel you forward? And, you know, this is the, I suppose in Ireland, we tend to have this sort of cynical thing, sure, it'll be grand. Go and have a cup of tea and talk to somebody, it'll be grand. And I'm going, speaking from experience, it fucking well won't be.
No.
Because you can't do it on your own, and you can't do it without the right people in your corner who will support you, cheer you, champion you, make you accountable, Not with the beat you over the stick type accountability, with the support you accountability. Let's work it out. You need people in your corner. We can't do it on our own, but we have this thing in Ireland where, and I'm sure it's not just in Ireland, but sure, why would I pay somebody? And I'm going, why would you not? If it helps you unleash everything you've got to unleash. And we are all unique and we are all special and we all have a particular viewpoint in the world. And our voices matter. Our voices matter because there is nobody like you, Siobhan. There's nobody like me. And years ago, I would have said, well, sure, what do I have to bring? And the realization is, well, I've got my perspective to bring to the world and you have your perspective to bring to the world. And nobody else has our perspective because it's our education, it's the people we've been with, it's the travels we've had, it's the traumas we've had, it's the careers we've had, it's the self-learning that we undergo every day. That makes us unique. And we've both got a different ability to articulate our messages and help other people. And I think, you know, if anything that I'm saying here today, or I say, have a little bit more confidence to make a new connection, that connection might be the first stepping stone into getting a new career or a new job or a promotion, whatever. It might be the stepping stone to saying, actually, redundancy isn't the worst thing in the world. I'm going to make the most of it. What does that look like? You know, we can help. I just think that if we can help some people to realize they can do more, be more, but it all starts with learning about ourselves. And I came across a quote there recently, which I really liked. Leadership starts with self-leadership. And I think that is pretty much it.
That's a beautiful way to end the podcast. I mean, like, you were speaking there and I was like, you know, when you're getting pumped up, I felt like I was in the gym or something. I was like, yes, it is. And everybody, I think that's the main thing, that everybody does have a unique perspective and a story to tell. And I mean, like, I had said it before on a podcast I did with Billy Brogan, that when I got a therapist, because I just wasn't coping, I thought I was having just like anxiety. And then he said on the podcast, well, when you had your breakdown, I was like, what? I didn't have a breakdown. He was like, no, you, a breakthrough, he called it, but it was definitely a breakdown. But it's that whole, you know, guidance of learning who you are and what you're capable of. And I mean, like, there's still tools that he gave me that I go back to, you know, today. So what I will say is that I could have you on for another hour. What I'm going to do is, this will be posted wherever you stream your podcast. It will also be on YouTube, but I'm going to, if it's okay with Jean's permission, to put a PDF out of those questions that you had asked there a few minutes ago, the questions that you can ask yourself. And I put the link to Network Me and Jean's blogs. What we might look at doing is maybe a LinkedIn Live. So for anybody who's found this, you know, podcast helpful, or if there's, you know, if it's brought up a question for you in relation to networking, not the dictionary definition, but the one about human connections and relationships and knowledge of oneself, maybe we can do like a 30-minute LinkedIn Live so people get to ask you questions directly and get the benefit of your skill set. But for now, Jean, thank you so much. I'm so grateful, and we'll definitely have you on again.